Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage? Guaranteed. Offside? For sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Hello again, everybody, from people from around the world. Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with from all sorts of people around the world. With, of course, me. And Russ Cortinel, and this is The Suspendables. That's that famous announcer, Russ. I kind of like the guy. You ever been to a boat?
Yes. Yeah. My brother Jeff and I went to a Tyson fight when I think he first got out of prison.
Oh.
And the fight lasted all of freaking 7 seconds or 11 seconds. It was awful.
Yeah. I remember, before we get into what's on the show today, I remember... It was really good. If you could get a ticket to closed circuit television, I don't know if you remember those days. I mean, you were part of a bar, so the bar would pay a bunch of money to get this live event and show it on the satellite in their bar, and you would pay $20 to go to the bar,
yeah,
you know, and watch it, right? And I remember running into the bar and, checking my coat because there was a Tyson fight against Spinks.
Uh-huh.
Remember? Yeah, there was a tough fight. So I was a little bit late, running for my life, and the fight had just started, okay, the opening bell, and I checked my coat, and she's like, okay, it's $10 for the coat, and now I need the 25, and so I whistle off the 35 fish and pay that, take two steps, and they go, and Sphinx is down. And I remember trying to go back and get my money, and the chick's like, too late, you know?
I wish ours was only $35.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
we were in Vegas, and oh, my God, the tickets were the most amount of money I've ever spent for a ticket. Stupid.
Well, I know a guy. You and I both know a guy. $100,000 or something, maybe four or five tickets to go to get to a boat.
That's crazy.
It's pricey. Anyway, coming up in the show today, we've got to talk playoffs. Four teams left. Those rounds are about to be over. Dallas is up 3-1 on lost wages, and Tampa is up 3-1 on the Islanders. Islanders are kind of the feel good story about this thing, but looks like that's gone by the wayside.
You never know.
You never know.
You never know. 3-1.
So we got those two things on. I want to ask you about John Cooper. He's a friend of yours.
Yeah, great guy.
The head coach who, I guess, last year they got wiped out in the first round, four straight.
Yeah.
And they were the favorite
to win the Stanley Cup. Set a record, didn't they, for wins or points?
Yeah, it was crazy year they had. Anyway, John Cooper's a friend of yours. I want to ask you what he's like. The NFL kicked off. Your future son-in-law, Eric Kendricks, of course, plays for the superstar for the Vikings. Yeah. Signed his big deal a year or two ago, right, Russ? And he's on his way. They lose, but let's find out about him. We got shutouts, Rusty. I better do that right now, okay?
Oh boy, here we go.
Well, I keep forgetting. There's so many nice people. Listen, you probably have some people too. You want to shout out, but. I got to say hi to Brett Deschain up in Lac La Biche, Alberta. Oh. Okay. Brett's started listening to the show. I convinced him, Russ. He gets a fresh shout out because he hadn't listened. And I was up there a couple weeks ago and I met him and he's looking after his grandparents, Roy and Laura. And Stan and Lisa in Calgary. Stan is sold. It's all he does now is trying to catch up on all the shows. And I met Stan a little while back, and thanks to those people, and And a bunch of my buddies in Ottawa are still listening, and from around the world.
We got a guy out of Dallas, Doug Wall. He's listened to every episode, and he's a huge Stars fan. He's here at Gosser, and he's always taking little tidbits from shows and coming up to me and saying stuff, and I can't even remember anymore what we said, but he's got it all down pat. So he's out every Wednesday mornings, Thursday mornings, listening to the show while he's walking his dog, Penny. His dog is Penny with the freaking, could knock over a small child with her tail.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. Oh my God. Things like a whip.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's a big listener and a big Stars fan. Good friends with a few of the Stars. He's got tickets on the glass, and Jamie, Ben and him are buddies. And so anyways, shout out to him.
Who I will give a shout out to, Russ, is, because they don't live here anymore, Russ, my two cats.
Oh!
Yes, pal.
Where'd they go? What happened?
Okay.
The girlfriend's allergic, let me guess.
Well, that's true. That's true. Oh. Yep, the new date is allergic, but that had nothing to do with it, because her house is so nice, Russ, she will never see my place, okay? I mean, she's got the smoke at like yours, okay? Her house is like yours, beautiful. And I just told her, you'll never see my house. She goes, well, I got to see her. I said, no, you'll never see it. No, nope,
that's funny.
We're not doing it. I couldn't find one positive thing looking around my house. Like if I compared it to your house, right? I would never invite you to my house.
Oh my God. But she is a cop, so she knows where you live already. So
yeah,
you're she screwed. Does. She's probably been in your house.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everyone knows that now. I was never going to say anything, but that's good. So everyone knows that. Yeah.
So what happened to the cats?
So anyway, I had enough of them, Rusty. Okay. I'm thinking of selling my place. I wasn't going to, but a joint, you're in real estate, a joint in my complex. There's only two units that are different. Okay. Either got a large unit or a small one. Mm-hmm. And I got a larger of the two. And of course I watch it like we all do. You know, you always want to know what's been sold, what's being listed, and what's going on. Anyway, a joint sells for like way over what it's gone for in the last 4 or 5 years. Same plan as mine. So I think, well, maybe I'll sell my place, you know? And maybe I'll throw it on the market. If I get it, great. If not, I'll stay here.
Yeah.
And then I look around going, okay, I'm getting rid of these cats. Okay. I've got to get rid of these cats. I've had two of them for 8 years. My place is like Disneyland for these cats, Russ. They destroyed it. Absolutely destroyed it. So I've got things fixed up. And so I'm trying to give them away, Russ. I got two of them. I'm trying to surrender them to one of these rescue places. Okay. And there's a bunch of them, and they're all going, no, sorry, we're full. And they almost always are. They're just, we got too many. I'm sorry, we can't help you. And I'm going, okay, what am I going to do? Anyway, long story short, a neighbor says to me, my daughter may want a cat, but she wants a mature cat. So the dilemma here, Russ, is my cats, okay, are not trained. They scratch everything. The cat pisses.
Oh,
they've
God.
Been known to, they've been known to actually, you know, to crap outside of the litter box. And she goes, my daughter wants a cat. And I go, I got a cat.
Yeah.
Anyway, blah, blah, blah. I tell her, but I can't now I'm going, I can't separate these cats, Russ. So there's no way I'll be able to get rid of them. I'm going to have to stay. Anyway, the daughter comes over to look at them. They live in my hood. They live right 5 doors down from where I live.
Uh-huh.
And she comes in and goes, and the cats perform, Russ, like I paint them. Rub up against her leg and purring and flopping on her back. She's giving it the, oh, mom, mom, mom.
Oh, God.
And I'm going, okay, here we go. I got to get it. And the daughter says, well, mom, I can't take a cat. I've got to take both of them. Oh, Rusty.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so a shout out to my cats, Russ. They're down at my neighbor's place 5 doors away. They found a beautiful home. And I'm super happy about that.
The good news is now you'll be able to sell your house for a profit. When they destroy that house in 6 months, you'll be able to buy it on a deal.
Yeah.
Just tell those cats to do exactly what they did to your house.
What a great way to get a deal on a house.
Yeah.
I was going to get $300, but it's $250 now for the 50 G's damage. Anyway, so that's a big shout out. Joey and Sugar were the two cats.
Oh, boy.
Changed my life, Russ. I was like a new man. Love it. I love the cats, Russ, but happy to get rid of them. Don't ever get. Do you have a pet?
We do. We have a little dog. Trader is his name. He was Paris wanted to buy this dog, and we were living in Victoria, and we go down to the pet shop, and of course somebody had already bought it, so she's all in tears. And the next day they call back and say that dog you wanted, they didn't, it got sick or something, and they traded it in on something else. So we went down and bought it. We called him Trader.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's hilarious.
So we got Trader. We've had him for about 15 years. He's a good little dog.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of you because we got all this smoke in Idaho right now, and I'm sure in Alberta and BC and Washington and California, Oregon.
Crazy
smoke. Like, you can't see, 100 feet in front of you.
Right.
And it's supposed to clear up here in the next few days. But I was, the last couple of days, I've been thinking about it. And this must be what it's like living in your apartment with you smoking nonstop.
I thought you probably said Jerome's up to 2 packs a day.
Oh, my God.
2 packs an hour.
Yeah.
Anyway, everything okay there where you are?
It's just smoke. I mean, it's really smoky. It's bad.
Right.
No fires. It's just terrible smoke.
Are you staying inside, or is it that thick or dangerous?
You're not supposed to be outside working out or anything. So that's easy. That's easy.
We're okay with that.
Yeah. I'm good with that. But we're okay with that. It's bad. It's definitely bad. It's like the top five worst air quality in the world. It's right here in Spokane.
Yeah. We had that last year here for a while I think fires in BC last year, and it's the real deal. When you think, well, how bad can it be? It can be bad. Yeah. There's some loss of life too with that. So we hope that gets better soon, with what's going on there. I've got Rusty. I told you this story last week, when we did, we do a little promo video, to tease the show and talk about things that are coming up in the show. Uh-huh. And I told you the story about Glenn Gretzky, and I did it on the promo. I didn't do it on the show. And when the guy cut the promo up, you didn't get the whole story. Okay. It was you and I laughing our head off, just going, and Glenn Gretzky, right?
Great.
So there was no story there, which is fine. He was assuming that I told the story on the show, which I didn't. So I got whacked with a bunch of people going, what's the story here? What was the story with Glenn? So I'll quickly tell you this story. So I bought into a real estate company several years ago with a couple of buddies in the early 90s. And Glenn Gretzky, Wayne's brother, moved out here. And he moved in with Wayne when he was kind of 19 or 20, just after high school. Mm-hmm. And he lasted at Wayne's place for about 2 weeks before Gretz phoned me and go, you got a new roommate. I'm not lying, Rusty. He phones me and goes, come here, get my brother. He's living with you. Okay. He's not living here. Okay. So Glenn moves into my apartment. Okay. Glenn moves in. We got a 2-bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
And we couldn't pay rent, Russ, on time. We were hiding from it was just a shit show, absolute shit show. And we used to, it was just nuts the way we lived together. We ended up with birds one time. We bought 2 birds and we ended up letting them out to fly around the apartment. And of course, both of them flew into mirrors, And anyway, Glenn wasn't sure what he was going to do. And I said, well, get your real estate license. And come and work, come and work for us. And he did. He did. Back in those days, Rush, you got your license in 3 days. Now it's an extensive course. But so Glenn gets his license. And my buddy, Daryl Morrow, big listener to the show as well. He's a great practical joker, hockey player, Rusty. Mm-hmm. Got drafted by the Oilers, played his college hockey at Denver for Marshall Johnson. And Daryl's hilarious. Okay. He's like you. Okay. He's like all the time. He's just pricked for action about, okay, how can we make fun of this guy? what gag can we pull? So there's a little piece written in the newspaper, Brother the Great One signed up selling real estate here in Edmonton. And so Daryl goes, I got an idea how we can get him on his first day in the office. And in those days, Russ, was so long ago, we only had pagers, and you got pink slips, okay, with your messages on them. And so Daryl writes out a message for Glenn, and it says, there's a chain of funeral homes here called Southside Funeral Homes. And funeral homes always have the best real estate, right? They're always right downtown. They, you know, they take up a bunch of land. And Daryl writes, you know, call Myra, okay, and at the Southside Funeral Home. And you need, you know, they want to sell one of their funeral homes. Imagine this, Glenn, for your first listing. Here's the phone number. Glenn grabs it, and right on cue, he says, well, what's her last name? And Daryl says, it's Maines, okay? He goes, okay, I got it, Myra. So we hide around. I don't know what's going on, right? And Daryl's like laughing. He's blowing bubbles. And we hide around the corner. He goes, watch this. So Glenn, he sits down. He goes, what should I say? And Daryl goes, just call her. It's a no-brainer. They love your brother. They're going to list this thing. It's like 600 or 700 G's, man. You're going to get a, you know, huge commission, blah, blah, blah. And they're businesses, so they want to sell. They're not tough to, you know, blah, blah, blah. He goes, okay. So he's got the message written down, Myra, and got her last name there, mates. And so he dials the number, right? And you could, you know, it's like Southside Funeral Home. And Glenn goes, yes, I'd like to speak to Myra Maines, please. Okay. So funeral home, Myra Maines, please. So he's now I'm laughing, right? And Daryl, he's got to cover my mouth. I'm laughing so hard. And then we're looking at Glenn, and there's a pause, and he goes, oh, he hangs the phone back up. He goes, well, I guess we got disconnected. You know, I'm going to phone her back. Phone her back, right? He phones her back. He's like, hi, I'm sorry. We must have got disconnected there. I'd like to speak to Myra Maines. Okay. Rusty, he hangs the phone up. He goes, I think that biatch hung up on me. Okay. And I'm going to Daryl, call it off, Daryl. He goes, no. Right? So he's going, she hung up on the phone. So sure enough, he redials. And he goes, hang on 1 minute here before you hang up on me. I don't know what's going on. But my name is Glenn Gretzky. And I've got a message here. I'm looking for Myra Maines. And there's a pause. And he goes, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
It clicked.
So poor Daryl. Poor Glenny. So anyway, there's the story in that. But
that's brutal. That's not funny.
Old hockey players got the best gags, man. They really got the best gags.
A reminder, the Suspendables are engaged on Facebook. Your comments are welcome always.
NFL, everyone knows by now is listening, but if you're listening for the first time, Eric Kendricks, who plays for the Minnesota Vikings, is a superstar with them, is dating your daughter, has been for a long time, Allie. They kick it off this week, Rusty, in the NFL. Bunch of new news in there, and I know you're a fan. I didn't have a chance to see the game, but they lose their first tilt.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, Russ, probably your future son-in-law. I don't know. Yeah. Are they engaged, Russ? Have they announced?
They're not yet.
They're not, but they're going to
be.
I wonder what that wedding will be like. That'll be cool. What about you, Russ? What was your wedding? You married an actress.
We'll send you the video of Allie's wedding, just so you know what it was like.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks. I won't be invited again. Perhaps.
My wedding was good. It was in LA, not a big wedding, 125 to 130 people.
Right.
Got married at the Bel Air Presbyterian Church, and it was cool. We used to go to, when we decided to get married, we started going to church. And Ronald Reagan's wife, Nancy Reagan, used to come, and she'd come with the Secret Service and attend church. It was interesting.
Nice way to roll.
Yeah.
All the weddings you've been to, I'll give you the short end of this. My buddy, first guy to get married, right? You all have a buddy. Mm-hmm. Had to toast the bridesmaids. And they weren't models. Let's say that. Okay, Russ?
Okay.
They weren't models. And he's asked me, what should I say? And of course, I'm being so sarcastic about the whole thing. He goes, shut up, man. I'm too nervous. The long end of it, Russ, is he gets up, raises a glass, and says, so the guy's so nervous, Russ. He's sweating. Okay. There's sweat coming down the side of his face. He doesn't know what to say. He forgets what he was supposed to say. And he looks out and goes, what can you say, you know, about the bride that he's going like the bridesmaids. And he looks over and he goes, all I can tell you is they may not be the prettiest, but they sure are the nicest.
Oh my God.
The groom, Rusty.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It's like, we're just like the poor bastards.
Oh my God. What do you mean the poor bastard? How about the poor girls?
I know. You know, it just, you couldn't write it, you know, if you're writing a comedy. And the other, what people thought was a great idea in the old days, Rusty, they'd leave cameras on the tables at the reception. I don't know if you've ever been to one. This is before cell phones.
I did that.
Yeah. Remember the instant cameras, and that all worked well until guys went absolutely crazy with taking pictures and like, you know, shoving cameras down their pants and shit like that. So,
well, you know what, at my wedding, they thought the cameras were for them. So they kept them all. We put them on the tables. Oh yeah. We put them on the tables and one of us had said, please take pictures and then leave the cameras. So that
you're supposed to leave the camera.
Right. Yeah. They freaking took them all. it was a great idea.
Yeah. I've been to some great weddings in my life, but why do I always remember the bad things? So NFL Rusty, like you said, we got your future son-in-law, but lots of the biggest news in the NFL, and you're a fan. You still bet it? Do you bet it a bit, Russ? I bet football a little bit.
No.
You don't?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Tom Brady, okay, longtime New England Patriot, of course, under Bill Belichick, and in fact played his whole career with New England, with one coach, Russ. How about that?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? Anyway, offseason, they send him and, of course, Gronkowski to Tampa. Mm-hmm. And it's all of, you know, everyone's upside down about it, been talking about it. Plays his first game. They lose, okay? And Brady doesn't play that well.
No.
Okay? He shows signs of Brady, but he also shows signs of a very novice quarterback. There were two blown coverages. One resulted in a pick six. And the coach afterwards, Bruce Arians, I think, is the coach of Tampa Bay. In his presser, Rusty, he comes out and goes, yeah, both of those were Tom Brady's fault.
No way.
Yes. They ask him what happened there.
Wow.
And not everyone's John Tortorella, you know, when they go, what happened with that bad play? And he tells everyone to F off and walks off.
Yeah.
This guy says, Brady, it was Tom Brady's fault. And what do you think of that, Russ? That whole scenario of, we've talked about calling players out before and sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, but do you think he did the right thing by saying that? Or
oof, seems aggressive to me after one game. What Troy Aikman was saying on TV last night was that the good and the bad news is they've had all this time to prepare for this game, and now they only have a week for the next game to fix all the things that need fixing. And so for this guy, the coach, after one game to kind of throw him under the bus, I guess.
Right.
That's a tough one.
Well, he agrees with Aikman and you saying, yes, we need to fix things, but Tom Brady needs to fix it. And I'm going, oh, Jesus.
Wow. Yeah, after one game. That's
a tough one. Or can he handle criticism? I don't know.
Of course he'll maybe this will motivate him even more to come back and play. But the guy, he's 40, what, 2? 41? So he's long in the tooth for a football player, and he's in a new city. You'd think you'd give him a little bit of slack for the first game.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just pointing the finger at him right away probably is not a smart thing to do. Right. But I listened to Brady after, and he said, he goes, yeah, that was, I think, did he say it was on? I didn't make the right throw. I didn't make the right play. I don't know, something, but it sounded like he was, I got to be better. He was taking responsibility. He didn't come right out and say, oh, that was all my fault. But he said something to the effect, it was on me.
Right. You played hockey, Russ, your whole life, and with an 80 game plus schedule, plus playoffs. And, you know, you'll hear about this where guys get called out. You know, if, if I'm guessing all the shows that we did and when we talk about this, because it happened, you've always been on the side of the player and said you got to give him some love, you know, and am I right there? You don't like it very often when you do hear it from coaches.
I think there's a time and place for it, and nobody likes to be called out, but sometimes players need to be put on the spot and get them to change their ways a little bit and wake up and start focusing a little more. And some players don't realize when they're not playing well, and coaches have to kind of put their foot down. It also, what it does when you single somebody out in front of a group of people, everybody takes notice and goes, oh God, I don't want that to happen to me. And then sometimes it's a deflection on that player. I've heard of coaches saying, hey, I'm going to come in here, I'm going to lay into you. It has nothing to do with you, has everything to do with all the other players. So just let's stage this.
And oh, really?
Yeah. Really? I've heard of that a couple of times where guys have just, you know, end up mother, you know, wedding each other. And the guys are all like, holy shit, what's going on? If he can do it to him, then he's going to do it to me.
Right.
But yeah, sometimes it's staged. And
that's a great play.
Well, I remember Pat Burns getting mad at some of the weirdest times at us. I mean, we were winning 4-2 and he was just pissed off. And we ended up losing or tying the game. And he came in and said, I told you so. I told you so. And I was like, fuck, we were winning until you told us, you know, how shitty we were playing. And all of a sudden we believed you.
Right. Way to go. Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I didn't agree with some of the times that he did it, but I don't know. I think when teams are just cruising along and they're playing well and the coach really has no impact and he's just changing the lines,
right?
I think their coaching insecurity takes over, and then they want to create something just right. to sort of rattle the cage a little bit. But anyways, I think some of the best coaches that I've ever had are motivators, people you want to play your best for. And then when they do get upset or disappointed, then it really hurts. And you want to pick up your game to win back, you know, that relationship that you had before. Right. So
do you see a problem like I do, Russ, in coaching the NFL, that there's only 16 games? So as you know, you got to go at it a little different. It's like every game is so vital.
Oh my God. Every game. Like this summer when we were hanging out with Coach Sean Payton from the Saints up here at Gozer, just the stories he was telling. And I said that to him. I said the best part about the NFL for me as a fan watching every Sunday, it's like a playoff game until it's not. Till those teams are so far out of it, then it's not.
Right.
But there's so many games that mean so much. And so it's so great for the fan to watch, especially when your team has a chance to get into the playoffs, or they're in and they're just trying to stay in. And I love football for that reason, that every weekend's a big bout.
Right. They got to be a psychologist, I guess, these coaches. I don't know how you would. I don't know how you coach elite athletes with all the dough and the disparity between money. And it must be tough to run a room, you know, in the day of pro sports. Speaking of coaches, one of the things I love about our show, every time we bring up a topic with having you on here, is I'll say, well, here's a story right now. Okay. In this case, it's Tampa, is about to go to the Stanley Cup final, up 3-1. And every time I bring a story up like that, Russ will go, oh yeah, I know that guy. And it's what makes our show great. And you are a good friend of John Cooper, the head coach of the Tampa Bay
Lightning.
The Lightning.
Jesus.
What sort of guy is he, Russ? Because he got crushed last year. We talked about it earlier.
Oh, he's a great guy. Smart. His path to the NHL was unlike no other. And it's actually, I think it's a movie. He was a lawyer.
Well, how come?
He was a lawyer and he played hockey growing up and went to college. I believe he played field lacrosse. And then when he became a lawyer, he had started volunteering to coach. And then he ran into a judge who said, you know, we need a coach for my kid's team. And he started coaching that kid's team, and then they won. And he just kept winning and moving up and winning and winning and moving up and moving up. And then before you know it, he was in the minors. And then they fired Tampa, fired their coach, and brought him up. And he's been there ever since.
Where's he from, Russ? Do you know?
Prince George.
Okay, British Canadian Columbia. Guy.
Yeah.
And so maybe his year.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. He's still got to win this round. And then if he wins this round, then he's got another one.
Right.
And, but he's just he's a wonderful guy, married to a great gal. And, they have three beautiful kids, and we hang out a lot in the summer up here at Gosser.
Right. Did you, when you were in the playoffs, Russ, by the way, it was brought up today, the big double overtime goal by Russ Courtnell to knock out Hartford.
Ooh.
Yeah. I don't know.
Seventh game.
Game seven. Yeah.
Yeah.
What year was that? Can you remember?
92.
Cool.
Yeah.
Were you weird during playoffs, Russ, around the house? Did once playoffs hit? I've told a couple of stories about guys who just didn't even know that they ran into me that day, that they were so focused and almost like they were out of it. What were you like, Russ, come playoff time? And what are other players? Are there some stories of guys who were like, super strange around playoffs?
Not really. I just think the focus is more intense. You're playing one team for a possible series of best of seven. Change up depends on the team. Sometimes the routines change, which is tough on players because they all the players love their routines. But for the most part, everybody just gets more focused. And I loved it. I loved the pressure. I loved the playoffs. So I loved the excitement and the series competition, you know, trying to win a series. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Who are the best guys at relieving the pressure? We told the story about Jeff's buddy coming out in a kung fu outfit. during big games.
It just depends. There's usually one on every team, you know. Mark Bergevin was probably the best.
Right.
He was such a practical joker, and he'd do fun stuff. Like whoever got the game winner in the playoffs, he'd come in and turn on some music and do a lap dance for the player that won. and the guys loved
it. No way.
Yeah. Now the players hand out like belts, you know, fighting belts and chains and
game
hats.
Balls.
All that stuff. But I never played with Bergie, but I've heard so many stories about him and how he just, I heard a story that when he was in Pittsburgh at the end of his career and Mario Lemieux was there and the Bergie was probably 2 years past plan, but they were having a team meeting and Mario Lemieux says, Bergie, you know why you're here, to keep the guys loose in the locker room.
Oh, well, I'll take it. You know, I'm in the bigs. Huh?
And then you've got some guys around that aren't playing. So there's that tension of the players that aren't playing and they're trying to keep away and not, you know, affect the, they want to stay out of the way is what I'm trying to say. And then if they get called in, if somebody gets hurt or somebody's not playing well and they get called up to play, then they step in and do their best. But there's some awkward tension sometimes around the room because some guys think they should be playing and they're not.
Was there ever a time, Russ, when you see like some guys can be overwhelmed by pressure and nerves? You'll see it in golf from time to time where there's just an absolute collapse by a guy and it's full on nerves. We hate to use the word choke, but it happens. Is there ever a time, Russ, when you were in there and start to notice, say, you know, a younger guy, a rookie guy or whoever going, this kid can't bring it right now, you know, that he's effed up from what's going on, that you had to deal with that with the coaches or?
The coaches,
I'm just thinking playoff pressure is just so big. It's just so life altering for every guy on the team.
Well, when I played, the younger players usually wouldn't play and they'd play the veteran players for that reason. But you get the odd – the odd yet. Every team gets a really spectacular young guy that goes in there, and they've had pressure in junior and world championships. And I don't think it's because of their youth. I think that people in general can either handle it or not. And so just because they're young doesn't mean they're ready for the challenge.
Right.
Young people may make mistakes, like they haven't learned to focus more on the defensive side of the puck before they take a chance to go on the offensive side. So that stuff is learned. But I think anyone who's afraid of pressure or folds under pressure, that's a pretty tough thing to change. You got to,
right.
You know, I remember at 10 years old playing in a tournament, and that was, we were playing against this great team, and it's the first time I felt pressure, and I loved it. The fans, a lot of fans, the better team, responsibility of our team trying to beat the other team. And we went out and freaking spanked them, and we weren't the better team, but we rose to the occasion. So that was, I remember that back when I was 10.
Right.
So I think anyone who's afraid of pressure can't perform under pressure. That's just something that they have to deal with personally. And it's not an age thing.
Right. Often people will weigh in with their opinion or their expertise on why one guy is so good. Okay. And they're taking on the heavyweights. Okay. So why was Jordan so good? Why they're, you know, document, why is Tiger Woods so good? You know, back in the day, you know, Pele, yeah. Ronaldo, these guys, baseball players, you know, why they're so good. And of course, Wayne Gretzky in hockey. I remember pundits one after another coming in to say, here's what separates everything. Russell would get so ridiculous, that, you know, some of the guys said, well, I'll tell you what, his eyes are actually further apart than most people's. So he has a better peripheral. Right. And, yeah. And people would look at each other and go, oh really? Yeah. I never knew that. You know, it's like, yeah, that can't be the reason. Okay. So I always said, you know, people might refer, you know, well, what do you think, Jimmy? You know, I'm like, well, listen, first of all, I'm not a hockey player. But I always knew that everyone's going to be in trouble, that this might make you figure out why he's so good when he plays hockey. Is I heard him in an interview one time, or maybe we were sitting around, and he ended up telling someone, saying, what do you do to relax? Someone said, you know, what do you do to relax? And Wayne said, play hockey. Right?
Yeah.
He said, the most relaxed I ever am, with all people pulling me in all sorts of different directions, the most calming, my heart rate goes right down when he steps on the ice. Wow. And I said, that's probably why he's so good.
Yeah.
You know,
I bet you Tiger and Michael and Pele would say the same thing.
Yeah.
They're also amazing athletes. And then they have that amazing drive and then the focus and the determination. I mean, every box is ticked at a 10 or higher.
Right.
I mean, yeah, Gretz is, you know, he wants to win more than anybody. And
that good. Jordan's,
yeah. But yeah. I like that, what he said, because I could see him. I can totally see him just when he gets on the ice. When you were telling that story, I can see him taking that first step on the ice.
We're in trouble.
Yeah.
Played against him. We got no shot.
There he is again.
Yeah. What's with the grinning at us as he skates around in warm up, you know,
licking, like, your
nodding
top.
His head, you know, grinning at the opposing team.
He told a funny story the other day about, well, since we're on the playoffs. So Rick Tocchet and him don't know each other at the time, and now they're really good friends.
Right.
And so Gretz is telling the story. They're playing, Edmonton's playing Philly, or Philly's in Edmonton. It's the first game, and Tocchet just keeps cross-checking him and cross-checking him and cross-checking him. And Wayne goes, what the fuck are you doing?
Right.
And he goes, Rick says, yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm going to give it to you every game, all seven games of this series. And Wayne looks at him and goes, I don't know what series you're playing in, but I only plan on playing four games.
Yeah. Yeah. He was funny, man.
Oh, he was funny.
Yeah. He had all the, you know, all the lines, right? And speaking of Rick Tocchet, coaching with Phoenix, we got a lot of response from people saying, you, without hesitation, I don't know what's happening in Phoenix with their GM selection, but you'd said that Ray Whitney should be the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
Tockett will stay on there as coach, I think. I hope he does. I love that guy. You would have played with Rick Tockett. So that's kind of where are they now. He ended up being a great head coach. Some of the teams you play with, Russ, I want to start this as a new installment in our show about where are some of these guys now. You can think of some guys that we want to know what happened to them. What happened to them after?
Where are they
now? Did you play with Dave Gagne and Minnie?
Yeah. Dave and I actually were line mates in the World Junior Championships in 83-84.
Yep.
And then we were line mates on the Olympic team in Sarajevo right after that tournament. And I got drafted seventh that year, the year before, and he was drafted like 11th, I think, to
New
York.
Good player, Russ.
Yeah, excellent. And great goal scorer, super competitive. And so Gags and I ended up playing together in Minnesota and Dallas and for a couple of years. And we lived right beside each other in Hackberry Creek in Dallas. And Sam was 5 years old. Sam Gagne plays in the NHL now, his son.
Right.
And he and his sister would sneak into our house. They were 5 and 3, I think. Come in the front door, and Paris and I were laying in bed. We just had Allie that year.
Right.
And we'd hear them come in, pull a chair across. My wife always had candy. They'd pull a chair across, climb up, and they'd open up the, instead of a cookie jar, it was a candy jar, and they'd sit on the counter, and we're laying in bed. We know right. who it is. Now we know who it is because they've done it so many times. And then we'd hear the channel, the clicker, the channel changer, and they'd watch cartoons for about half an hour. And then they'd go out the back door and go back to their house. And so I have so many fond memories of the Gagnes, Dave and his wife Joanne and their kids. And anyways, we have utmost respect for Dave. He's a real smart guy.
Where is he now, Russ?
So he is an agent with Jeff Jackson, another old teammate of mine, and they merged with the Bobby Orr Group agency, and then they just got bought by the Wasserman Group. So they have McDavid and Austin Matthews are their two biggest clients. So they're doing well.
Period. Get rid of everybody else. You're good to go.
Yeah. No, they're doing great. So the two of them are have an agency together, and Gags is brilliant hockey mind and business mind.
Because I knew this about him. When he got into the outdoor rink business, I thought, at one point.
Yeah, called Small Rinks. He had one built in Oakville, Ontario. And he talked to the guy, and the guy was only building one or two a year or something because he didn't have the capital to expand. So Gags and him formed a partnership, and then they, I mean, last count, I think they're in the hundreds they've built now.
No kidding. Well, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. He's cool. Done. And all, of course, all the hockey players are having him build them. So, but I've seen the rink, and it's just a cool little rink out in their backyard. And so he, yeah, that's one of his businesses.
Did Neuendijk end up in management? I know he was with Dallas with the front office. Is he still there? You know?
No, he was with Dallas, and then he hasn't been hired since, as far as okay. I know. I think he lives in Dallas, but I don't know Joe all that well, other than the years we played against one another. But he, after management, I don't believe he's worked in hockey, because he was in Toronto and then he went to Dallas. I think that's how it worked. He started right. out in Toronto and then went to Dallas.
And what about Mike Modano? Where did he ever end up now? What's he doing?
Last I read about Mo was he was an executive with the Minnesota Wild. They just hired him a couple years ago, but I really don't know what Mo's doing. I know he's a hell of a golfer and he's got a young family, but I haven't heard lately where Mo's living.
Right. Very cool. There's our first installment of where are they now? I'll give you a heads up next time, Russ. It's a little easier so you can look up these guys and find out what they're doing.
Give them a call. Hey, what are you doing?
Yeah. Sam Gagne is with Detroit now, by the way. He was here in Edmonton right now.
Yeah.
He might have been here a couple of times. And
yeah, he was.
Rusty, before we go, it looks like the NFL and the other leagues now with the social injustice movement through professional sports. You and I had a conversation about, you know, I thought a lot of the stuff they were doing from a protest level, I didn't like. I don't like the word protest when it comes to this stuff. I think it conjures up aggression in other people. And I was kind of hoping that they would sort of pull back a little bit and try and come up with, and you've always said this too, try and come up with some common ground that we can look at and turn this thing into a positive. I think the NFL is doing it right now. They had sort of had a pregame where players locked arms to support it. It's been pouring out, you know, for Black Lives Matter and that movement. But I wonder, Russ, a lot of the people not naysayers about the movement itself, but some people are coming out saying, you know, I kind of hoping that maybe this will die down a bit because there's so much going on in the world, and I flip on a game to kind of relax and watch it. And I wonder what your thoughts are about that down the road, what they should do. And the other thing is, I'm predicting here that a lot of other causes, Russ, are going to step up and go, well, what about our cause we're trying to, you know, champion out there for, you know, gang violence, domestic violence, you know, gun laws, school shootings, all sorts of stuff that people are trying to push. And I wonder if that's going to pose a problem for, say, the NHL down the road.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. I nothing's going to, all the issues that we're talking about are going to take some time to change. Mm-hmm. And I think that the players are going to keep doing what they're doing until they start seeing some positive change and consistent change and in their communities, in their, in the cities that they play in, the communities they grew up in, and what's happened in and around them and their families and what they've witnessed over the years. And I think Will Smith said it best. Will Smith said, the actor said that it's now just being filmed, what's been going on for years. And whether you agree or disagree with how the players are reacting, I've always said, I just wish everybody stood for the anthem because I don't agree with the kneeling part.
Right.
I really believe in communicating and trying to help fix the problem and working with the community leaders and hopefully trying to bring about change.
Right.
But I think this is going to take a while. I mean, we just saw, everybody saw on TV what happened in Compton with that kid running up and shooting those two police officers while they sat in their car and in the head, both of them in the head.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a lot of crazy things going on right now, and there's a lot of division in the country, but I think that for a lot of people, what's happening is there's a conversation going on, and for some people who live in a white community, don't know a lot of this stuff. And then, you know, I'm married to a Black woman, and so I've got mixed kids, and the stories they tell me are just horrific. And, you know, I would have never known that if I hadn't married Paris. I grew up in a community in Victoria, and most of the communities I lived in, I didn't experience the things that they've experienced. So we have to be open-minded, open-hearted, and have compassion. And the unfortunate part, what's going on right now, is there's a group of people that are really bad people that are hijacking the protests that are civil, and they're creating violence and burning and ruining businesses. Uh-huh. There was one story about Wisconsin when 120 people or something like that were arrested, and not one of them were from that town or city or whatever. They all came from somewhere else to create damage and burn. And So there's a hijacking going on out there. And that it's really sad that those people they're ruining the message that a lot of people are trying to educate people on and help get better, not worse. And so it's going to take some time.
It'll be interesting to see what happens down the road. You know, I always said, Russ, if you go back in time, sports had it right when they came up with this idea years ago of playing the national anthem at the start of the event. And it's the most galvanizing thing ever, you know, and everyone stood up. And I'm not talking about kneeling during the anthem or whatever. I'm just saying it kind of covers all causes, you know. It kind of covers everyone. It means something to people differently. And I think sports was brilliant to say, look, here's what we'll do. We're going to play the anthem. And it always worked. It always worked. You know, no one went crazy. No one took it too far. No one does or did. Everyone you know, respects it completely. And so the sports world has a way of making positive change for sure. So we'll have to see what happens. We'll have to see what happens from this thing. So
God, I remember playing in Montreal, and the starting lineup would be on the blue line, and people would write into Sir Savard and say, you got to tell those players to stop moving around on the ice during the anthem and disrespecting the anthem. And it was so hard to stand in your skates in one spot. A lot of players, right, when you see them moving, it's because it hurts like hell to stand at attention in your skates.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. Okay. It hurts like hell. So, Serge would come down and go, you guys on the blue line, you got to stop moving around during the anthem. God damn it. Our fans are calling in and they're pissed off. You're disrespecting the anthem and the flag.
All right. That's funny.
Oh God. You're getting shit on for moving. God.
Yeah. Yeah. A hockey player. Yeah. Don't rocking back and forth. Knock it off. Okay. Rusty, that's a wrap, brother. God, we're really good, eh? We can cover everything. Serious stuff, funny stuff, weddings, lap dancing, NHL players. We got it all. drop us a line. thesuspendables@yahoo.com. We'd love to hear from you. Send us your thoughts, and we'll take them up with Rusty. You're back to business. Are you sold another couple places this week?
Yeah, people are still buying. It's great.
What's going on?
Discovery Land Company. That's what's going on, baby.
Attaboy. See, a little setup there for me, Russ. My favorite play, Russ, then we'll get out of here, selling real estate, was nobody wants a pool here in Alberta, right? It's not like where you're from. Everyone has a pool. But here it's a detriment to the sale, okay? It's a downside if you list a house with a pool. And so I had one. I figured out what to say, and I'd get the people in my car, go for the first showing, and I'd say to the guy, do you like cutting grass? And the guy go, I hate cutting grass. Well, fantastic. There's no grass to cut here. It's a pool. Take it easy, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. You've been listening to The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and Russ Cortland. See you later, Rusty.
See you, pal.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortnell in LA. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.